This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, everybody, Trey Wingo here, and the Michael K. Show with Don LaGreca and Peter Rosenberg starts right now. Question, will this be a day without a Don rant?
We shall see. People are expecting. It's been a long time and a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Tuesday. It's December 7, 2021. Michael K., Don LaGreca, Peter Rosenberg. We're apart, but we're together for the next 4 hours. The other 20, that's your responsibility. Hope everybody's having a good day. Boy, what a wasted opportunity for Peter Elliott Rosenberg yesterday. Could have had a nice Zoftig 5-point lead over
me.
But the Bills just couldn't do it in the terrible weather conditions. I would say that Bill Belichick outcoached Sean McDermott. Three passes by the great Mac Jones, and they just ran the ball down the throat of the Buffalo Bills, and they won. And it was excruciating, which made it more pleasurable because Peter thought he was going to cover, thought he was going to get that touchdown at the end, then an extra point. Then
wasn't even watching.
Wasn't
even watching.
Stop. Don't
lie. I turned it off.
Why
now,
lie to yourself?
I'm not lying. I was doing Raw Talk for WWE, and I had literally turned it off. And let me just say this, Don.
Yes.
At any point last night, did you get a text from me when the weather was what it was and they saying, why do I even do this? Ah, I'm quitting. Did that ever happen?
No.
Just took my medicine. I knew very early on they were going to be incapable of covering the number. There were even times when they were down, the way the score was set up, it was like, oh, even if they kick a field goal, they'll win by two and not cover. I knew it was basically impossible early, and I took my medicine. We didn't get a chance to really spend time on it yesterday, but your made-up claim yesterday that if I won, it would be, like, impossible to come back from because I'd be up 5 with 9 weeks left was insane anyway. It's another week, and guess what? At the end of this week, I'm still number one.
Too bad Anthony wasn't with you on that, right?
I'm still number one.
And he's the one who told me he had the song.
He had ENCO problems, bro.
Come on. You felt a little bad, didn't you? Come on.
Listen, I wanted to win.
Of course, pathetic. You did.
No, it was really – listen, it was really sad that they were not able at any point to make you feel like they could get the ball in the end zone, no matter how many times they got down to the red zone.
I was just amazed that Buffalo knew, even Peyton Manning was saying on the Manningcast, well, you got to have some play action at some point because they're playing for the run now. And they didn't throw. They wouldn't throw. They threw once. And the one time they threw in the first half, you could see that the Patriots on the sideline, they were angry. And it was a terrible pass and a great catch. They just ran it down their throat. They never for a second even faked that they were going to throw. They kept running and running.
Right.
And that's why, to me, we can have the debate about Belichick and Brady all we want, but Brady's greatness does not take away from Belichick's greatness. The guy's a genius. He had a game plan going in. He was not deviating from that game plan. He knew when he was going a certain way against the wind. They weren't even thinking about throwing the ball. The guy's brilliant.
Well, it's a combination of brilliance and also something that I wish I had. I know you wish you had, Michael.
A hoodie?
Is just not caring what people think. Because there's a lot of coaches that would have came up with that game plan, sat there before the game and said, I can't do this. I just can't. Because if we'll lose, I'll get killed. I'll never be able to sell it to my players. I'll never be able to sell it to the media. If I get destroyed, my general manager or my owner will rip me. How can you do that? He doesn't care. He felt that was their best chance to win. He did it. He didn't care how the players felt about it. Didn't care how the media felt about it. Didn't care about, you know, talk show hosts around the country. And that's what makes him different than everybody else. He's the coach that will go for it on fourth down from his own 30. He doesn't care because if he fails, he'll take the slings and arrows. It doesn't matter. Now, maybe that comes from all those championships. Maybe it comes from all those years working with Bill Parcells, who had a similar attitude. But it's not so much coming up with a game plan. I'm sure there's a bunch of coaches that would have came up with that game plan. I think he's the only one that would have the guts to do it because he just doesn't care.
Doesn't it make sense, too, when you really think about it? What makes him so good is exactly the same quality that makes him such an unappealing person when he talks.
Right.
He just doesn't care. Don's right. He doesn't care what you think of him in the press room, and he doesn't care what you think of him on the sideline. And yesterday, he crafted that win.
He did. It was all him. I mean, we have to give Josh McDaniels some credit, too. But they stick to things. And, you know, also, he didn't blitz the whole game until the last play. I mean, the guy's just, he's brilliant. He's absolutely brilliant. And you could see, I mean, we watch Joe Judge, who's off the Bill Belichick tree. He doesn't use timeouts the right way. I thought Belichick was so ahead of the curve that he didn't do this in one Super Bowl he had, by the way, but he did it yesterday. Called the timeout with 2:15 remaining because he's thinking, you know, Buffalo's going to go in. I want to give Mac Jones at least 2 minutes to play with. Called the timeout there. Other coaches don't do that. I'm not saying that it's a brilliant move, but we do see a lot of coaches mismanage timeouts. Yeah, we see it all the time.
You don't have to worry about that with him. He gets it. He knows it. He's not going to be overwhelmed by the moment. And he came up with a game plan that was unconventional, but it worked. Now, other things have to come into play, too. Your defense has to come up with a stop because I'm sure Buffalo was pretty satisfied with the amount of points they gave up. But here's the thing that Buffalo's got to be wondering about. How do they continue to get yards when everybody in the world knows they're running the football? At some point, you know play action's not an option. He threw three times in the entire game, once for most of it. So, you know, at some point, you put nine men in the box, say, all right, I dare you to beat me. And even when they get dropped for a five-yard loss, I'm going to run again. But too many times getting past that first line and getting 8-9 yards when everybody in the world knew they were going to run the football.
You know, I'm sitting watching the game. And right now, by the way, the Patriots would have a bye in the AFC. They have a 1.5-game lead over Buffalo. They play Buffalo again. And the odds that they had on Get Up today, the two most likely teams to make the Super Bowl, Tampa Bay and New England. And I think that would just blow up every other Super Bowl in terms of interest. It really would. I mean, there's the narrative of Brady against Belichick. Nothing's going to top that. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be amazing if it happens.
It's not going to happen.
It won't.
What's going to stop it from happening?
Both.
Because it makes too much sense.
Neither of them. I don't think either is making the Super Bowl.
Tampa Bay's pretty good.
The Patriots are very good. And I think Belichick will see another Super Bowl. It may not be this year. It'll be next year. He's going to get them to a Super Bowl. I have no doubt. I don't know if it's going to be right now. And frankly, are we quite sure what Tampa is at this moment?
They're pretty good.
I'm not sure what any team is right now. I mean, the reason I don't think it's going to happen is there are just multiple options coming out of the NFC. And why would Tampa be considered so much better than, say, Green Bay right now?
I mean,
both have great quarterbacks. Arizona, the only reason we're not completely in love with Arizona because it's new and we don't know them as well because they haven't been this good for such a long, long time. You could go back to Kurt Warner when he went to the Super Bowl, but even with Colt McCoy as the quarterback, they've won two games. But are we ready to just fall in love with them just yet? I'm not sure. And the Rams can still be heard from, although I'm not sure they're good enough either. But so much can happen between now and then. It would just be too perfect, Peter, to actually have it happen.
Yeah, I you're absolutely right, Don. And Don, as you're saying it, you know what's sounding sexy right now? A lot of low Arizona spreads in the playoffs.
Pick them.
They're going to be a team that just gets wildly underly appreciated the whole way if they go on that run. I don't. When we get to playoff time, I tend to believe in Tampa more than Green Bay. I just, part of me feels like this Green Bay is going to end up like every Green Bay team, really good during the regular season and offensively special, and then when they get to the playoffs, whatever.
Yeah, but they have a secret weapon.
The toe? COVID toe?
No, they'll go to Joe Rogan for game plan.
That's great. You bring in Coach Rogan.
Yeah.
Forget about it.
One other thing that I was thinking about as I was watching the game. You know, Jet fans were banking on this. Think about this. The sea is finally opening up. Belichick, 69, had a bad year last year. A lot of his players opted out because of COVID. They didn't want to play for him. He has no quarterback. Cam Newton wasn't the answer. Miami had a good year last year, started off poorly this year, lost 7 in a row, and you think, yeah, it's all, the sea's opening. It's going to be the Jets and Buffalo battling for the division supremacy. Right now, the Jets are firmly the fourth team in the division for the foreseeable future. Tell me what you're hanging your hat on there. Buffalo's not going anywhere. Josh Allen signed to a long-term deal. He's great. New England, we thought, was on the downside. It's not. Miami, like, it was falling apart. They're looking for a quarterback. Tua's played very, very well, and they've won five in a row. They don't seem like they're going anywhere. They're building a really good defense as well. Where's the sea opening for the Jets, guys? Where is this the time and place for the Jets to make their move? It's not. They've got to become great. I don't know if they have it in them to become great.
That's the thing, is you've got the Bills, who I think are very well coached, have a ton of talent. You've got the New England Patriots, who are aggressively well coached and may actually have a decent quarterback. We'll see. We haven't seen a lot of Mac Jones, but he's been winning games, and he seems to kind of work for what New England's trying to do. Miami's interesting to me because they were awful early, but Flores has got them playing great defense. Tua's starting to get better now that it looks like they're not trading him away. Again, he's not the greatest quarterback, but you're starting to see some signs where they're getting better here in the second half of the season. We should be seeing that from the Jets, right? Now, again, I don't want to kill Robert Saleh. He's in his first year. But when you have really good coaching and a plan and it starts to work, shouldn't right now we should see this team begin to turn the corner? I get it with the quarterback because he's been hurt. But, Michael, shouldn't this defense be getting better? Shouldn't the way the defense looked in the first 4 weeks of the season, shouldn't that be the way the defense looks now?
Yeah.
But instead, the defense has gone south. And, you know, the offense has had their issues because, you know, Wilson's been out. But again, the offense was kind of clicking when they had the backups in there. But you're still trying to grow with Wilson. I feel like the Jets and the Giants just seem to be a tick off from everybody else. Because, again, look at Washington. You know, Washington and the Giants are very similar, right, Peter? Mm-hmm. You know, trying to find a quarterback. They thought it was going to be Fitzpatrick. Now it looks like it's going to be Heinicke. You know, a good defense that, you know, struggled early but now seems to be getting better, finding ways to win games. You can't tell me that Washington is that more talented than the Giants are. But Ron Rivera is a good coach, and he's got him on the right path. Why can't the Giants be Washington?
And you can't tell me about, you know, injuries with the Giants on their offense. The football team lost Chase Young, and their defense got better.
By the way, not to beleaguer the point, Montez Sweat is the second best player. They lost them both.
Yeah.
But, the truth is...
And they lost their starting quarterback, who today was officially announced is going to miss the remainder of the season because he's going to have a hip surgery. They've had a lot of losses, and they win. The Giants can't win.
Yeah, they just don't know how to win, and they don't know how to get any better. So every injury becomes catastrophic, right? Every mistake blows up because they're not close. Why are they not close? Why are these two teams just so far off the fringe from everybody else? When teams in their own division, they figure it out. They get better. Yeah, again, no offense to Taylor Heinicke, Peter. They didn't find the next great quarterback, but they're making it work with him. And maybe he will develop into a really good quarterback. But he's not. What is he?
No. I think the point you're making is a good one. I'm not confusing the Washington team with being uber talented, but what you see with Ron Rivera, and I don't know if you guys ever see, you probably don't because you're not loser fans like I am. They put out the videos of Ron Rivera in the locker room after these games, and you just see the way this team kind of believes in this guy, and you see the things that they've done, and you're like, okay, they're not special, but they are able to win some games that they shouldn't win.
And let me tell you a little secret about that, okay? Because the best thing you could say about Joe Judge, he seems like he's a really good guy, and the players seem to connect with him. Like what he did last year when who was it? Logan Ryan, his mm-hmm. wife had the bad pregnancy, let him go home. Like players love that. But what players really connect with is when the plan works. When they go into a room and say, here, guys, this is the game plan for Sunday's game. We're going to win. And then it works and you win. And that's when they begin to believe. So they believe in Ron Rivera. Is he the best coach in the world? No, but he's a very good coach who's won places. And they probably feel real good about going to war with him because when he tells them something, it gets done. So that's more than all the other ancillary things that make you a good guy, a good friend. But what makes you a good coach is when the game plan works, when the plan is executed to the best of its ability. Not bad timeouts and scrapping plans and starting again and more important than anything else, losing the game.
Do you think any fans of either team think that it's going to happen with the current administrations? Obviously, the Sala
one. I think Jet fans more.
I was going to say, Sala would be too early to say. But, of course, you got to include Joe Douglas in that conversation as well. And does anybody at this point, do Giants fans believe in either the GM or the head coach?
No, the GM is done. The GM has lost everyone. And I think Judge has lost everybody, too.
This is going to surprise both of you because I usually don't have good hamstrings. But I've been thinking about this a lot, and especially on the heels of what he said after the game Sunday. The only reason that Joe Judge keeps his job this year is because the Giants can't again fire a coach after 2 years. That's it. That's the only thing he has going for him. If they had just come off the Tom Coughlin era and Joe Judge was the next guy up, he'd get fired at the end of this year just off performance, off attitude, off messaging. It's just not good. I still don't think they're going to fire him. I'm telling you, they're not going to fire him because everything I hear is that Mara just absolutely adores him. But to what end? What? What is he seeing? Because the most important thing that a manager does now or a coach is message, not in football because you obviously have to coach a lot too, but also the message you send out to the fans. Forget about the media. Who cares about the media? But you use the media to send out the message to the fans. Joe Judge putting lipstick on a pig. Team's not improving. He got rid of his offensive coordinator there. They're so much worse with Freddie Kitchens than they were with Jason Garrett. So what exactly is Joe Judge showing you to give you any kind of enthusiasm moving forward? What is he doing?
That's all I've been asking. And we've been fighting about it, Michael, and I won't want people to get the wrong impression. We're fighting it because you're taking the stance of the Giants are bringing him back, whether we like it or not. And I'm just arguing I don't think he deserves to be back. But I asked the same question you asked about Sam Darnold last year. You know, what have we seen? What game have we seen? What moment have we seen where we said, you know, I think you could see the potential in this guy. You could see that he's a really good coach. Forget about the press conferences and how he relates to the players. What game plan works? What makes you say, I like that decision. I like what he's doing here. I like the way they play for him. Not many times.
No.
Certainly not this year.
No.
Maybe there were moments last year. But when things started to kind of crumble with the injuries, I thought he had a terrible game plan that primetime game against Cleveland that I thought could have been a winnable game. That was down the stretch. They had that win against Seattle. That's the one crowning achievement. The win in Seattle with Colt McCoy as the starting quarterback. Other than that, where's the win where you say, that's on our coach? That was all coaching.
It's not there. He hasn't done. Their special teams aren't great, and that's his area of expertise. He doesn't do timeouts well. They seem to regress. They don't get any better. And we're only bringing this up because we're not comparing him to Bill Belichick, because a lot of people off the Belichick tree have been rotten apples. Brian Flores probably has the best chance to be somebody good. Charlie Weiss failed. Romeo Crennel failed. Who has been really good out of the Bill Belichick tree?
We've talked about this before. Nobody.
No one. So
and it kind of makes sense to me, too, because what he does, you can't teach. He can have people that he likes, people that he thinks were able to work well under him, but he's not giving you anyone who's him or even a facsimile of him.
And don't you also get the sense, Peter, he's not telling them state
no
secrets.
Way. No,
he's not telling
why?
Him the secret sauce because he knows he's going to face them one
he's
day.
He's going to face them. Of course. He knows how people become head coaches in this league. He's the one recommending them. So he's teaching them everything they know, not everything he knows.
But I go back to Ray Hanley, who was an assistant coach with the Giants when they won that Super Bowl with Bill Parcells against the Buffalo Bills. He was the running back coach, and the Giants ran the ball well. He was the clock management guy, and the Giants handled the clock management well. And when Bill walked out the door, he suggested Ray Hanley. Ray Hanley was a good coach, not a good head coach. There's a big difference, a big, huge difference between being a good football guy, he kind of knows his business and is a good assistant, he's a good lieutenant, but you give him the keys to the car, doesn't mean he's going to be able to keep it on the road.
No, he hasn't. So, I mean, there's so many humbling things about yesterday. It's unbelievable. A couple of people, snarky people on Twitter. San Francisco ran the ball down L.A. Rams' throat, so it's nothing new that Bill Belichick had. Did they throw three times, clown? Did they throw one time in the first half? Did they commit to the run that they did it all but three times? No, they didn't. So that's why this is special. And what Don and Peter said, this guy's got the kind of attitude that the bottom, he doesn't care that it looks different. He doesn't care if it didn't work because he believed in it. He saw the weather and said, this is what we're going to do.
Listen, this is not our first rodeo, all right? I covered a Ranger Raider game where the Raiders ran the ball like the first 18 times against the Jets. It's not that it's like it is rare when you only throw the ball that many times. The game that he's talking about too. Stop, yo, you're trying to be a tough punk. You don't have the guts nor the knowledge. I looked up that game. Garoppolo threw the ball 19 times. So go home, all right? Just go home to your mom and sit down and get an early dinner in and go to bed, all right? Do not compare a quarterback throwing 19 times to a quarterback throwing three times and two of the passes came late. So stop it, all right? But it's not even the fact that he came up with the game plan, all right? It doesn't take a superhuman genius to come up with that game plan, but it takes a special type of belly and heart to say, you know what, I'm going to do it. There's not a lot of coaches that have the guts to do it and stick with it. Michael, there were times they'd lose 5 yards on a run. It'd be
and
third and 18, run the ball again.
Still did it. Never wavered, ever. Other coaches would. Other coaches care. And, you know, you could see that McDermott got a little ticked off because he kind of downgraded what Belichick did. Did you guys hear what he said?
Mm-mm.
Here is Sean McDermott after the game where everybody's, like, giving Belichick a lot of kudos. Here's the Bills coach.
Let's not give more credit than we need to give credit to Bill Belichick in this one. Whether it's Bill or anybody else, they beat us. But you sit here and you tell me when we start with the average starting field position at the 40-yard line and he starts with the 23-yard line, and I'm rounding up in both cases, and we were 1-for-4 in the red zone, and they were 0-for-1 in the red zone. You give me that ahead of time, I'm saying I like my chances. I like my chances. With all due respect, it's not a Bill Belichick type thing. It's what are you doing with the opportunities you got? What are you doing with the opportunities you got? We turned the ball over at the plus 30-some yard line. Sloppy football. Sloppy football. So I'm very comfortable in that situation.
Someone sounds a bit defensive. Well, so, yeah, you did have better field position. You didn't take advantage of it, did you? Because his defense is too good. I've always been a Belichick fan. I've always leaned slightly to the Belichick angle
right.
on Brady. And I think that he made Brady into Brady being maybe even better than him. But I think that if Tom Brady was on any other team, no team is carrying four quarterbacks. People don't give Bill Belichick credit for that. No team is carrying four quarterbacks on their active roster in order to keep Tom Brady. So I think it was Bill at the beginning, and then Brady became bigger than life. And you could say that Brady might have surpassed Bill, but don't tell me that Bill was a passenger on that train. I'm sorry.
Well,
Bill was riding that train.
I do think, and even Ian O'Connor mentioned this in the tweet last night, that sometimes it gets a little kooky with Bill, like his game plan against the Buffalo Bills in Super Bowl 25 is in the Hall of Fame. I mean, the Bills still averaged a point a minute. The idea was that the Giants' offense kept the ball away from Buffalo. Buffalo only had the ball 19 minutes in that game. Now, Bill came up with a good game plan, but things get exaggerated. Things get taken too far. I get it. You know, and that's probably another situation here. Maybe we're overly praising Bill, but the point is that he does a lot of things other coaches don't do. A lot of other coaches wouldn't have the guts to do, and it works. And he just lost the greatest quarterback in the history of the planet, regrouped after a tough year last year with COVID, and now has a team that might be poised to go back to the Super Bowl. So I can understand how it irritates a lot of coaches. So, yeah, we go a little crazy sometimes about Belichick, but it's not like it's unwarranted. It's not like we're not talking about one of the, if not the greatest coaches in any sport. The guy's 68 years old. He continues to do it.
I think he's 69 now.
Yeah, he's finding ways to win games with a team that I think, you know, it's good. But I'll tell you what, you want to talk about, like, exaggerating? Tom Brady took over a very good team in Tampa. Remember, Jameis Winston threw 30 touchdown passes the year before. He threw 30 interceptions.
Right. But it's not like they didn't have weapons.
He threw 30 touchdown passes, and then, oh, by the way, they're able to add Gronk and Brown to what was a very good offensive football team. So it wasn't like he took over, the 0-16 Detroit Lions a couple of years ago. He took over a pretty good football team that he was able to take over the top. And Belichick is trying to do like this time without Brady. So I think both of them are amazing, but it's a night like last night where you just say to yourself, if I'm going to side with one or the other – I'm probably going to side with Bill.
Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN, brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. We have so much to do today. I mean, we do have to get it all done. The Knicks, are they at a crossroads as they play San Antonio? The Rangers
My goodness.
Try to continue their hot streak tonight. Looks like Don's going to be at the play-by-play, or on the play-by-play,
yes,
as he looks all green in the studio. So.
I don't know what I can do. I think that's, yes, we'll figure it out.
Yes, they will. You look like the Grinch. Anyway, Buck Showalter has gotten, according to Sports Illustrated, what I would think would be a huge endorsement. Max Scherzer wants the Mets to choose Buck Showalter. Not that players choose managers, but that should go a long way. And I know Buck very well, and I have no idea what the connection is between Showalter and Scherzer, except that their last name starts with an S. I have no idea. We'll try to figure it out.
Okay.
1-800-919-3776. Your phone calls are next, right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Michael K. Show.
Jet fans were banking on this. Think about this. The sea is finally opening up. Belichick, 69, had a bad year last year. Miami had a good year last year, started off poorly this year, lost 7 in a row, and you think it's going to be the Jets and Buffalo battling for the division supremacy. Right now, the Jets are firmly the fourth team in the division for the foreseeable future. Buffalo's not going anywhere. Josh Allen signed to a long-term deal. He's great. New England, we thought, was on the downside. It's not. Miami, like, was falling apart. They're looking for a quarterback. Tua's played very, very well, and they've won 5 in a row. They don't seem like they're going anywhere. They're building a really good defense as well. Where's the sea opening for the Jets, guys? Where is this the time and place for the Jets to make their move?
The Michael K. Show.
They've got to become great. I don't know if they have it in them to become great.
On 98.7 ESPN.
Be great, everybody. Be great. Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN, brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. You know, with Christmas approaching, you know what I miss, Don? I'm going to ask this more to Don because he is of this area. Now, Peter's been here a long time, but might not realize the significance of what I will say.
Go ahead.
I miss Modell's. You could really fill a lot of shopping Christmas needs for people in Modell's. Sneakers, stuff like that. I mean, just I miss it. I miss it and went out of business during the pandemic. Is it wrong for me to miss Modell's?
No, it's not wrong to miss, but there are alternatives. Dick's does a good job.
Excuse me?
Wow.
But Modell's is a local store. Dick's is a national store.
I understand.
And Dick's is gigantic.
Right. I loved Modell's. I just did. And I loved Iron Eagle's voice on the commercials.
I know.
I'm sure Ian built a couple of wings on his house with that.
I'm sure he did. No, I missed that. That's a great, because they had everything from ice skates to
everything,
batting helmets, like everything they have. Now there is a national aspect to Dick's, but they do a good job as well. Again, I got my binoculars there.
What are you getting binoculars for? What are you looking at across the cul-de-sac? Carlos's place?
No. I don't use them much anymore, but when I was doing Jet games, it was always good to have the binoculars to see who was injured.
Mm. Yeah, you were looking in the stands at pretty girls. I know your whole act.
Well, Nancy was the one that went to Dick's and got it for me for Christmas. I don't think that was her motive.
It wasn't her motive, but it was your manifestation of her motive.
Peter, would you believe me if I said I never used it for that?
Yes, of course I would.
He's
not an animal. But remember who we're dealing with, Don. Michael projects, okay?
Right,
don't play psycho babble with me. I'm not projecting anything.
Really?
I don't use binoculars in the booth. I don't.
But you don't. It's not really a baseball thing. But in football, especially MetLife, you're a fair distance away, and there are times where it really helps to kind of see the play closely, to see who's injured. So I don't really think you need it. It's not a baseball thing. I think it's a football thing.
It used to be a baseball thing when you wanted to see who was warming up in the bullpen, but that's an easy shot now. From the truck.
I'm not good with binoculars. It's really hard for me to see anything and not have it. I don't know. It's just uncomfortable.
You're better with a monocle. I've always said that.
Yeah, I'm a big monocle guy.
She was my one of my favorite characters on Friends. So let's talk about the Mets managerial opening. Monocle Geller.
I don't think Peter got it.
The Monopoly Man does not have a monocle.
It eventually got through my cement head, and that was not a good joke. Did you get it, Peter?
What, a monocle?
Say it again, Michael. It's worth
another go. One of my favorite characters on Friends.
That's awful. You should be ashamed of yourself.
Listen, if I've got to slow this train down for you to get on, then just don't get on.
Well, I didn't want to. I'm mad Don brought me back. I was fine to just miss the ride. I just watched the train go by and thought, you know what, no worries, I'll take it.
But you know why you didn't get it? I'm going to tell you why you didn't get it, because you're probably like cutting a new album there while we're on the air. I could tell.
No.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Monocle Geller. Oof.
I would venture to say that in the last few days, monocle has been said more on this show than in any other in the history of the medium.
You know what? And that's something we can hang our hat on.
I think it is.
I think Jack Benny shows used the word monocle a lot.
Again?
Dating myself?
Yeah.
So Max Scherzer, according to Pat Ragazzo of Sports Illustrated, has told the Mets that his preferred choice for manager is Buck Showalter. And that struck me as odd, because I started to do the math in my head, and I don't think there was ever a time where they crossed paths.
The only thing I can think of, Michael, is that they were both in the same market for four seasons. When he was pitching with the Nationals and Buck was in Baltimore.
Yeah.
Could there have been a relationship there? Could there have been some crossover? Did he, you know, hear a lot about him because they were both kind of in the same market? Same network. I don't know. It's a reach, but Scherzer was in Washington from 14 to 18. Buck was in Baltimore from 10 to 18. So for the last 4 years of Buck's managerial career, he was in the market. That's all I can think of.
And the other thing that I can connect is that the GM of the Nationals, Mike Rizzo, likes Buck a lot. They're pretty close.
So that's logical.
Mm. So maybe Scherzer might have done some homework and Rizzo said, this guy is the real deal. But the Mets they're casting a wide net speaking to people. It's being reported that Bob Guerin, Bob Guerin.
Oh.
The bench coach for the Dodgers is being interviewed. Quartararo, the bench coach for the Rays being interviewed. Espada, the bench coach for the Astros, being interviewed. Brad Ausmus has already been interviewed. And it's a little odd, because I wonder how this sometimes affects powerful people like Steve Cohen. But the entire New York media market is pushing Showalter. And sometimes powerful people don't like to be told what to do. I'm not saying that that's the case here. I wonder if that will play for or against Buck. Now, what the media wants is one thing. But when the pitcher that you gave $43.3 million a year to says, if it's – he's not quoted in the story. Sources are telling Ragazzo that this is the case. If he's telling them, I think it should be Showalter, I think they'd be out of their mind to hire anybody but Showalter. And everybody – this is full disclosure. Everybody who's listened to this show that knows me knows that I think Buck Showalter is the bee's knees when it comes to managing. You will never be outmanaged if Buck Showalter is your manager, ever. He overprepares to the point of being obsessive. He does things that other managers just don't do in terms of preparation. And one of the knocks on him, well, he's not really an analytics guy, which is nonsense. He's an information gatherer. He's obsessive about information. Now, is he going to let some young people from MIT make out his lineup? I can tell you, no, he won't. He will not. He'll take all their information, though, and then he will employ it the way he wants. So he loves information. To say he's not an analytic guy, that's a joke. Another knock on him is, well, he's old. Well, he's 65. Tom Thibodeau, 63. Nobody ever mentioned he was old. We opened the show lauding Bill Belichick, who's 69. Dusty Baker is 72.
And let's be honest.
Tony La Russa is 76, I think. Come on, what's 65 these days?
Well, also, managing baseball to me is even more reasonable as you get older than any of the other coaching jobs. Like, Thibodeau running up and down the sidelines, it's a different sort of animal, I feel like, than managing a baseball team.
I mean, I guess what people are alluding to, Peter, might be your mental acuity might not be as sharp as you get older. But let me tell you, I talk with Buck Showalter a lot. He's as sharp as he was when he was 36 years old as a Yankee manager, and I learned more baseball from that guy in the 4 years that I did the radio and he was the manager than I have learned ever since. That's how brilliant this guy is. And he would bring accountability to the Mets. Their clubhouse would change with the combination of Showalter and Scherzer. That clubhouse would be completely different, and he'd be the guy messaging for the Mets. He'd be the guy sending the message out. He knows how to deal with the media. In fact, and I don't mean this in a pejorative way, he knows how to work the media. He knows how to manipulate the media the way he needs to be out front of it and out front of the message. It would be a home run hire. This is the sort of thing. You've just signed a 38-year-old pitcher to a three-year deal. So I don't think Max Scherzer's buying a lot of green bananas. Let's put it that way. So the bottom line is you're trying to win right away. Showalter makes you win right away. That's what he did with the Orioles. The second year that the Diamondbacks were in existence, he had them in the playoffs. The Orioles, he turned them around in a nanosecond, and they were a laughingstock. The only team that he didn't get to the playoffs was the Texas Rangers. And you know what? After he left, the players that he had there and had in place, well, Ron Washington ended up taking them to the World Series. So this guy is outstanding. Yeah. If the Mets want to make an impressive hire right away, that's the guy. Any other person that you bring in, Brad Ausmus is going to be a question mark. Joe Espada has never managed. He'll be a question mark. Quartararo, the right-hand man of Kevin Cash, he'll be a question mark. They could end up being great. But what question mark do you have with Buck? So I understand what Scherzer is saying. He wants to win right away at his age. And the guy that's best suited to do that, at least on the guarantee, I would think, would be Buck Showalter.
Now, nothing's ever a slam dunk, Michael. You look at Buck, and I want Buck, full disclosure, I want Buck to be my manager of the New York Mets. But you can look at, 95 they lost. He leaves. Joe Torre wins immediately in the very next season. Same thing happened in Arizona. He's gone in 2000 and 2001. The Diamondbacks win the World Series. 4 years after he left Texas, Texas wins the World Series. Now, do you look at that as a negative or a positive? Did you look at him not being able to close and the next manager was able to? Or that he built a foundation that allowed the next manager to have success? I guess it's glass half full, glass half empty. But the one negative is it did not end well in Baltimore. And it wasn't all because of the money or lack thereof or the small payroll. It didn't end well in those last few years in Baltimore.
Well, I will give you the answer to that. Again, okay. I'm somewhat prejudiced in this. Dan Duquette didn't make great deals. Dan Duquette was the guy giving the talent. And you can see the talent level was dropping precipitously over those last couple of years. So there was a quick drop-off. And Buck knew it was the end. He just knew it was the end. And the Orioles were getting cheap. They didn't want to spend money. They made that terrible signing of Chris Davis. And that tied up too much money.
Oh, no.
So the bottom line is, I can't talk anymore.
This is emotional. I mean, listen, you love Buck. You're getting emotional. He didn't get the offer yet. Calm down.
But I don't think the Baltimore drop-off was his fault.
Again, I'm just playing devil's advocate. All right? Because just the back and forth. Because, again, I want him as the manager for all the reasons that you said. But those last couple of years in Baltimore, 47 and 115. All right, that could be explained away by the fact that the team was awful and just not well run. Because the year before that, 75 and 87, and then his third to last year in 16, they were 89 and 73. And they had a 500 in 15, and then on the 96 win season in 14, and there was the whole Zach Britton thing, and that didn't go over well. But that's going to happen. Managers are going to do some things that are going to not really look great when you don't win. But he did phenomenal with the Yankees, did phenomenal in Arizona, won 100 games in Arizona in 99, had winning seasons in Texas when they weren't used to having winning seasons there. So there's a lot of things that I like. But if you wanted to nitpick it, Peter, didn't close well in Baltimore.
No.
And not a lot of postseason success. The losing to the Yankees, if you remember how difficult that was on, you know, last late inning home runs, and certainly in 99 with the Diamondbacks when they lost to a Met team that I think that they were clearly better than. So there has been things on the resume, losing in 95 to the Mariners, blowing a 2-0 series lead in the best of five there. So there are some things that I think give you pause. Nothing age-related, but just managerial-related that you could say that not great in the postseason, didn't end well in Baltimore, but overall the guy knows baseball. He stabilizes things within the organization. He's a legitimate manager for a team that really hasn't had that kind of credibility since Terry Collins. So I would have no problem having him as
Michael,
my manager.
One question?
Yeah, babe.
Possible that in addition to what you said about the management connections, that just also by Scherzer being in Washington for so long and the period in which Buck was in Baltimore, there's like any baseball community crossover, sort of like the Mets and the Yankees, or no?
Possibly what we discussed 5 minutes ago when it came up in conversation here. But we can revisit it if you like.
I don't recall that.
Putting a different
voice. You don't recall that? I mean, you want something like Bender? You don't recall that Don just had that conversation 8 minutes ago.
What did he say?
Exactly what you just said.
Even to the point of crossover.
Oh,
you know,
my,
within
this is
the
disturbing.
Community.
This is like penalties and helmet.
I only brought it up, Peter, because it was just so obvious and out there.
I was going to let it go. I was actually, I'm in the Christmas spirit, and I was going to let it go because he's my friend. But I'm glad you exposed it.
We couldn't both do it, Michael.
Well, you did. You did both do it.
But Michael was going to let it go, and if I let it go, then there'd be nothing. But it was just too. It was.
Can
too
you, Anthony? Maybe we come up with a drop where we hear Don's and mine back to back, and hear how close.
No, because that could be funny just to see if we were like thinking exactly the same thing.
It wouldn't be funny. It would be disturbing because where was he?
I
saw him. I'm watching the monitor. He's got a beautiful cream-colored shirt on. He never moved, so he was there. But where was he? Were there drugs involved? Did he just completely brown out? I don't get it.
We should definitely say what we usually say in these situations. This is a good show. You really should listen.
All right, here is Terry Collins on SNY. He has become a huge advocate for Showalter.
I think it's time to make an impact, and I think the impact is Buck Showalter. First of all, in today's game, there's so much data available, and there's so much data you have to look at, and nobody crosses the T's and dots the I's better than Buck Showalter. He's one of the most prepared guys I've ever been around. He is into it 100%. He's never going to vary. He's going to be ready when the game starts. He's going to have his decisions in that first inning ready to go when the situation shows up in the eighth inning.
Very well said. Now, not everybody's going to like it. We have not talked to Met fans about this. We have not really, you know, we've mentioned in passing. We haven't gone to phone calls, 1-800-919-3776. But Charlie in Staten Island, Don and Peter, he doesn't like Buck Showalter. Charlie, tell us. Hey, Charles.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good. How are you?
I am very, very disappointed in you, Michael, that you speak up Buck so much. He is a horrible human being, in my opinion.
How so?
I just don't like the man.
Have you met him?
I was at a Mets game. I met someone who swore it wasn't him, but it was him. So I was at a Mets Diamondbacks game, sitting right behind the Diamondbacks dugout. I was about 15 to 16 years old, and I was with two of my cousins, and Mr. Phil Walter walked out of the dugout, and I wasn't asking for an autograph, wasn't it? Just wanted to say hello. Hey, Mr. Phil Walter, I was wearing my Yankee hat. I'm a Yankee fan. Hey, Mr. Showalter, how are you? Nice to meet you. Oh, kid, I'm not Buck Showalter. I said, come on. I know who you are. You used to manage the Yankees. I know exactly who you are. No, I'm not Buck Showalter. I said, buddy, I'm not asking you for anything. I'm not asking for an autograph. I don't even want a handshake. Just wanted to say hello. Swore up and down he wasn't Buck Showalter. About 15 minutes later, comes out and hands out the line of cards. Gets announced. I mean, what are you lying to me for, buddy? For what?
And that makes him, to you, a horrible human being, is what you're giving him.
Horrible human being. I'm a 15-year-old kid with my 11-year-old cousin who just wanted to say hello to the man. And the guy's why?
You know what? Charlie, I'm sorry. I'm sorry you had to go through that. I'm sorry that that's the...
So dramatic.
That painful, Michael.
No. I'm sorry. I mean, obviously, it still stuck with you. I mean, it was many years ago. He was a Diamondback manager.
I mean, listen, it's at worst somewhat obnoxious, but like
right, and it might have been playful or whatever the case may be. And when,
it's not like a joke gone wrong, actually.
Right? And when he's when he's managing, he is really locked in. I'm not making an excuse for him, but when you say he's a horrible human being, Charlie, I'll challenge you on that. He's a terrific human being. A terrific dad, a terrific husband, a terrific grandfather, a terrific friend.
I challenge whether you know any of those things.
Of course, I know his family very well.
You've been around him and his grandchildren?
Yes.
And you're sure that they all feel strongly about him?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
that was.
When he becomes the Met manager and he's on the show. You just pipe down. You don't even say anything after that comment.
Well, I'm just joking.
You'll probably miss it anyway.
Well, hold on. It's almost as dumb. What he said, what our caller just said, was moronic, okay? He just called up and said he's a horrible human being because apparently Buck maybe wasn't in the mood and on one day said to him, hey, I'm not Buck Showalter. That's absurd. But you know how I feel. You responding by telling us things like he's such a great person, you know, he loves his kids. I don't think that's the highest standard. But more importantly, you've seen him operate in the baseball world for a million years, and you know the kind of guy he is.
But I know his wife really well. I know his kids really well. Right. His kids turned out great. Maybe it's Angela's reason that they turned out great. But he has a great family. He's a dedicated. What am I defending him for? He's a great guy.
I'm just saying it's irrelevant.
But no, it's not irrelevant, especially with the Mets, who sometimes hire people that aren't good people.
Okay, fair. That's fair. That's fair. They're, especially recently. That is, I take it back. You know what I was thinking? Possible that Scherzer and Showalter have a relationship from their time in the D.C. area?
Yeah, he's making light of it, but you know what? We should get him help, Don.
It was
not good.
That was really
disturbed me. Because no matter how much I joke, I care about Peter, and there's obviously an issue here.
Well, I apologize.
If you want to hear Peter Brown out, stay tuned. We're going to have that for you in just a moment. 1-800-919-3776. No, there's a need.
No, there's a need.
There's a need because you're going to have to bring this to your doctor. 1-800-919-3776. Kayla Greco, Rosenberg, and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Well, this portion of the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by 2 by London, the engagement shop by London Jewelers. Pick or design the perfect engagement ring to fit every budget. Visit 2 by London at the Americana Manhasset, East Hampton, and Westfield World Trade Center. Don, you might want to listen to this. This is an expose on someone we care about.
Okay.
Who obviously has something that's gone amiss. Rather than have me set up, here it is. I don't think there was ever a time where they crossed paths.
The only thing I can think of, Michael, is that they were both in the same market for four seasons. When he was pitching with the Nationals and Buck was in Baltimore.
Yeah.
Could there have been a relationship there? Could there have been some crossover? Did he, you know, hear a lot about him because they were both kind of in the same market?
Michael, one question.
Yeah, babe.
Possible that in addition to what you said about the management connections, that just also by Scherzer being in Washington for so long and the period in which Buck was in Baltimore – there's like any baseball community crossover, sort of like the Mets and the Yankees, or no?
Possibly what we discussed 5 minutes ago when it came up in conversation here. But we can revisit it if you like.
Peter, I ask you, are you concerned after hearing that? No, I wish this was a bit. Everybody, I wish this was a bit. It's not a bit. It's somebody who obviously went to a place that's ugly and dark and lost part of the show. It's not a bit. This is Peter being disturbingly not with us.
I don't know if it was ugly and a dark place. I thought I was there for all of it. Apparently, I did space out there for a moment. And, Don, I think you made some salient points.
I would hope we were on the same page for there for a second.
Wow.
It is troubling, though. It is troubling.
It's troubling almost doesn't give it the gravitas that it needs.
But
it's scary, is what it is.
But is it scary? Is it anything we need to be concerned about medically?
Yes.
Or is it that baseball is the code that shuts Peter down? Like, if you want to shut Peter down, you type in baseball.
What was that?
Him shutting down.
What is it?
Oh. Like, if he was like a robot, you know, baseball, football, basketball.
The real Sally Sazon tweeted that Peter was abducted by aliens and taken to Dick's Sporting Goods and pro for 8 minutes upon returning, repeating everything verbatim Don LaGreca said.
Dream portal.
Let's go to the phones. Phil in Glencoe. Phil?
Yeah, I'm here, Mike.
What do you got, babe?
I just wanted to reinforce what you said about Buck Showalter. With Scherzer coming in, he'd be 1A in terms of impact, and he would make great things happen in a big hurry. A second thing I wanted to bring up was Sunday night was tough for me. I couldn't look up the Hall of Fame vote because I was afraid I'd be disappointed again about Gil Hodges. But Monday morning I was up early, turned the computer on, and made my day. This was a guy came along in the Depression, went to the war, served proudly in the Marines, and then had a great, great career. And if you lived in Brooklyn in the 50s, he was the guy. And what he did with the Mets was icing on the cake. So it was emotional for me. And I never did understand one thing, and I've always hoped I could talk to you about this one question.
Uh-huh.
When Robert Moses told O'Malley he had to move to Queens, why didn't he simply let the Dodgers build by where Barclays is and have the Giants move down from Harlem into Flushing?
Because he did not want because that's where O'Malley wanted to build Ebbets Field, the new Ebbets Field, which was actually, Phil, going to be a retractable roof. And Robert Moses said no. He wanted him to go to Queens. And O'Malley said, these are the Brooklyn Dodgers. I'm not going to play in Queens. I think the Giants tagged along with the Dodgers because the Dodgers could not have been the only team that went to the West Coast. They need another team out there as well. So when teams traveled out there, they could make those two stops.
And honestly, Michael, the way things were going with the New York Giants at the time, it was if they left, they were going to leave. And I guess the word was they were going to go to Minnesota. And I don't know if anybody really would have went crazy because the attendance was way down. It was just a mess with the Giants. And they just saw the opportunity to piggyback because the furthest west team at the time the Dodgers moved was St. Louis. That would have been impossible for them to be able to handle it. So somebody had to go with them, but I just don't know if there was the outcry at that time. I wasn't alive at the time. Just the history that they were really down and out in the Polo Grounds was just a mess. Because playing baseball there was a joke.
But it's amazing that O'Malley wanted to build that ultra modern stadium on the side of the Barclays Center, right at that site.
But pox on both their houses too, Michael, because I understand we're the Brooklyn Dodgers, but then you became the LA Dodgers. You could have made it work in Queens. I know it would have been awkward, but it's better than going 3,000 miles away and destroying, you know, hundreds of thousands of fans that were, like, crippled by that.
I agree, but he probably made a lot more money going to LA. I mean, he had the land, he owned the stadium, so.
Yeah, but you can't just blame it all on Robert Moses. I mean, granted, Robert Moses was not a baseball fan and didn't get the whole Brooklyn connection. He was interested in building up the suburbs and all that. But at least Queens was a nice olive branch. It's a heck of a lot closer than Los Angeles.
Yeah, if you ever really want to know the history of New York, read, there's an 800-page book on Robert Moses. I mean, he kind of almost single-handedly destroyed the Bronx by putting the Cross Bronx Expressway right where it is. So, and there were some nefarious reasons to that as well. So give that book a read.
And Levittown exists because of him, right?
Yeah.
He built that, trying to get people out of the city to the suburbs, build highways. That was his whole MO.
One quick story. Vin Scully really wanted Gil Hodges to get into the Hall of Fame and wrote a very long, impassioned letter advocating for Gil to get into the Hall of Fame this last time. And there was a story in there that was amazing to me and speaks to the man that Gil Hodges was. A lot of people always look at Pee Wee Reese as the guy who really supported Jackie Robinson and put his arm around Jackie Robinson in Cincinnati when they were yelling all these racial epithets at him. But Scully wrote a story like Robinson could not even go to a supermarket when the Dodgers were training in Florida. They wouldn't allow black people into a supermarket. Mm. So Gil Hodges never got any credit for it, and it was never really written anywhere other than what Scully just wrote. Gil Hodges and his wife Joan would go to Jackie's house and Rachel, Jackie and Rachel Robinson, and take their grocery order, and they would go and shop for them every single time they needed food and then bring it back to their house. Mm-hmm. Gil never wanted any kind of like credit for it, and it just tells you how ugly it was down south for an African-American player, but Gil Hodges made it easier for the Robinson to eat. So, I mean, this was a really good man, and, you know, if you talk to a lot of the 1969 Mets, they give him total credit. And the fact that he died at 47 in 1972 of a heart attack on a golf course, I read today, I think it was in the New York Post, Ed Cranepool said, we would have been contenders for years and years after that if he remained alive. That's what a crushing blow it was to Dodger and Met fans. So, but, you know, the 69 Met championship is one of the great championships in sports history, one of the most unexpected championships. Let's go to Kevin in Morristown. Kevin.
Yeah, you guys, how you doing?
Great. You?
Well, you know what? I have to make a comment on your outfits today because they are absolutely horrendous, man. I don't know. Are you guys all wearing sweatpants over there or what?
What are you wearing, Kev? What are you wearing?
Wait a second.
What are you wearing, Kev?
No. I don't even go there yet, Michael. What's the problem with the outfits?
Oh, my God. It's, like, yellow and the worst sweater I've ever seen Mike in.
No, this is a brand. It's a nice brown sweater. I like my sweater.
My sweater is a Christmas sweater.
I mean, it's Christmas time. Can't you put on something decent?
I'm curious here. I don't disagree with everything you're saying. But what are you seeing in my light beige sweater? What are you seeing that's so offensive? I'm curious.
Well, it's just the combination. If you look at the
You know what? He's not wrong, guys. If you look at the screen of the three of us, Don's shirt is actually poop brown. He's not wrong about that.
Dear God.
And then,
but I think it's just the screen. I don't know what it is. The lighting. It's just this sweater's fine, right, Andrew? This is a nice sweater, right?
But, Kevin, you do realize, Kev, that this is a radio show that you happen to eavesdrop. I mean, we could be wearing pajamas if we want. I could be nude.
That's
from the waist down.
That's what you were wearing. It looks like you're about to open Christmas gifts on Christmas morning.
Well, you just said it's Christmas, so it looks like I'm about to wear – I have a red sweater on. Kevin, again, I'm going to go back. What are you wearing, bud?
Here we go.
I'm sitting here in giant shorts and a sweatshirt.
Oh, okay. So you sound like quite the Tom Ford. Thank you for calling in. 1-800-919-3776.
Blackwell's jealous.
That's the number. That's going to date too many people.
In his defense, though, he's not on television at this moment. He's watching television. Now, I happen to be offended because I went to the AG store on the Upper West Side today and bought this sweater. By the way, the manager lady there, I think her name was Eva, and her husband's name, I think she said, or was, I don't want to get it wrong.
Otto.
CJ or TJ. Anyways, he's a huge fan of the show, and she was lovely, but it's a brand new sweater. I just put it on. What's the problem, man?
Why are we fighting this guy sitting there in giant shorts? I think I look terrific. I own what I wear. I think it's wonderful.
Hey.
I thought about it. I said, you know what? It's one of the last shows that we're going to have before Christmas. We'll be doing the shows next week. So let's start wearing like a red sweater. I love the way I look. But thanks.
And here's something I could say that the caller can't. What we're wearing is clean.
That is true.
I bet that guy was sitting in his own filth.
When you say his own filth, Don, you mean
that he soiled himself.
That's what you're saying.
I'm so jacked up right now. I need to eat this horse poop.
That I can't tell you. But I'm sure that outfit, when was the last time the Knicks played? Saturday,
yeah.
That's when he put it on.
Holy crap.
Wow.
He sat down to watch the Knicks game Saturday afternoon.
Right.
And hasn't got up since.
Interesting. 1-800-919-3776. That's the number. More clothing opinions by you if you'd like. We're up for all business. Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
This is the Michael K. Show.
I think Buck Showalter is the bee's knees when it comes to managing. You will never be outmanaged if Buck Showalter is your manager, ever. He overprepares to the point of being obsessive. He does things that other managers just don't do in terms of preparation. And one of the knocks on him, well, he's not really an analytics guy, which is nonsense. He's an information gatherer. He's obsessive about information. Now, is he going to let some young people from MIT make out his lineup? I can tell you, no, he won't. He will not. He'll take all their information, though, and then he will employ it the way he wants. So he loves information. To say he's not an analytic guy, that's a joke. So the bottom line is, I can't talk anymore.
This is emotional.
The Michael K. Show.
I mean, listen, you love Buck. You're getting emotional. He didn't get the offer yet. Calm down.
On 98.7 ESPN.
That was a good moment I forgot about, Don. That was like the worst getting choked up we've ever heard.
Yeah, but clearly he wasn't getting choked up.
Yeah, well, it's clear you're not getting choked up when you're choking on nuts.
Let's leave that right there.
Right there. I'm going to clean edit.
But the point is, Don, he comes after you just the same, is what I'm saying.
You know what?
You have to realize that in hockey.
You telegraph your punches so badly. You really do. So today is the day we jump on Peter. Right now you're trying to just change it and jump on me. And it's not going to happen because you had an entire five-minute segment brown out. So you can't get out from under that, no matter how you redirect. Disgraceful.
I accept it. I take it. I move on. You live to see another day. You know, it was a moment that happened.
A lot of people didn't like it on Twitter.
What do you mean they didn't like it?
It did not provide entertainment. I mean, Steve Brzezinski, no, Shining Wizards Kevin said, "Please, I hope I didn't miss the recap of that when I left work." And I said, "Unfortunately, you did miss the recap."
Yeah.
Well, a couple people said I would do Peter's job for half the money and not brown out on baseball.
Is that really what you want to bring to the table, Michael? You want the people who are volunteering to take my job? That's just sad.
Just open auditions now all of a sudden.
You know how many people and during every Yankee game, you want me to go find all the people who say they could do your job better and give them merit?
I didn't give the guy's name, nor did I give the resume to Ryan Hurley. By the way, I asked you to do a favor for me pre-show. Did you get it done?
Me?
Oh. Yeah.
I did attempt to. I'm still waiting.
Yeah. You're really something else. The Patriots yesterday beat the Bills. They've won 7 in a row. This is after starting off 2-4. They now lead the AFC. If the season ended right now, they would get the bye. And it's just amazing what Belichick has done with a neophyte quarterback who he didn't allow essentially to throw the ball yesterday.
Right.
How about the punt that from the time the guy dropped the ball to his foot, the wind took it?
I know. That kind of reminded me of Sean Landetta in Chicago in the 85 championship game. Remember that?
Yep. And that's why one of the reasons they lost. But, it was a great game plan. They weren't going to let a kid throw the ball in that. Somebody unearthed a tweet from Mac Jones from 5 years ago. 5 years ago. So he was like 17, and he just tweeted, I've never seen snow in my life. So these are not conditions this guy's used to playing in. Belichick knows this stuff.
Yeah.
Belichick probably knows, what color underwear he wears. He knows everything. He's Buck Showalter, but he has rings.
No, he does the work.
Oh, and he's not personable at all.
Yeah, Buck is personable.
and the pendulum keeps swinging back and forth, right? Well, Brady was the reason because they won the Super Bowl last year with Tampa. And now because Belichick's got the Patriots on their way to a possible bye, well, it was Belichick. We can all agree it was both of them. But when you look at what he's doing with his New England team, all right, last year they had five starters on defense on COVID, and Cam Newton wasn't very good. And he still had them go 7-9. And now he's got, you know, I don't know if he's a better quarterback, but a quarterback that at least he knows what he's working with. I think he thought he would get more from Cam, and Cam just wasn't ready to play at that level, and he figured it out, unfortunately, too late. And now he's got a quarterback he thinks he can work with. He's got his defensive players back. But I don't think anybody can convince me, Michael, that this team, talent-wise, has the talent to be a one seed in the AFC. And if he's able to get them to do that, that's pretty special. That's almost as special, if not as special, as what Brady did last year in Tampa.
I think it's more special.
It might be.
Because Brady joined an all-star team in Tampa Bay.
That's a Pro Bowl team, basically. And this would be...
There's no Pro... one Pro Bowler on this team? Think about it.
Yeah, let's not play the game of embarrassing ourselves and saying, what players do we really know well on this New England team?
But that's always been kind of the MO, with the exception of that 07 team that went undefeated. They've always been able to do more with less.
But that doesn't make it any less amazing. And now they're doing it minus Brady, too. I mean, we have no idea what Mac Jones is, really.
I think the football world would implode if it's Brady against Belichick in the Super Bowl. I really do. I think it would be unbelievable. People couldn't get enough of it. They might need three weeks between the championship game and the Super Bowl.
Now, there's a lot of resistance that both of those teams are going to have to face, because I still think Kansas City is a major threat in that conference. And, listen, they're probably going to have to do some of it on the road. They might have dug themselves too big of a hole to even consider, you know, possibly being a one seed, but I still think Kansas City is good. The Bills still almost won that game yesterday, so I think the Bills are still very good.
Bills are hanging on to the playoffs by a thread.
We'll see. But we're starting to get a clearer picture, right? I don't think Pittsburgh or Baltimore, I don't think either of those two teams are good enough to go to a Super Bowl. I don't think the Chargers are ready yet. They don't look like they're a team that can do that.
No. It's
so it's really Kansas City and Buffalo, I think. Am I missing anybody? I don't
think so.
Yeah,
forget Tennessee.
Tennessee and Indianapolis, too. I mean, I don't know.
Phil Simms said something on the halftime show the other day. It was after the game. He said, I watched Indianapolis. I can't believe they're 6-6.
Yeah, it's – but listen, give Tennessee and Indianapolis some consideration. I mean, Tennessee, I think they're good enough to make the playoffs and good enough to be a pain in the neck, but I just don't think they've got a Super Bowl-caliber quarterback. And, you know, I think the injury at running back is going to be devastating to them. So
they might get him back.
But
the playoffs.
Right, for the playoffs. But are they going to be on the road? Are they even going to be able to make the playoffs and lock that in? We'll see how it goes the rest of the way. But I still do not put Indianapolis, Tennessee, Baltimore, Pittsburgh, Vegas, any of those teams on the same – or L.A. with the Chargers on the same level as New England, Buffalo, and Kansas City. And I think Kansas City may be their biggest threat.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I think Belichick could slow down Mahomes. I think Buffalo's their biggest threat. I guess they play Buffalo in two more weeks again. They have a bye week.
Do you realize how it's completely unreasonable to even analyze this? It feels like. And the more we talk about it, the more I like New England, because Tennessee now, yeah, they're sitting 8-4, but how much of that season was ridden on Derrick Henry, who they don't have anymore? And Baltimore, you have no idea who they are week to week. They certainly don't look special. Kansas City, yeah, now we're saying they're better because they've been winning games, but now they're doing it without Patrick Mahomes throwing for any touchdowns. So it's like and the Chargers, to your guys' point, I don't know. I mean, I picked the Chargers this week, was happy to get the win. However, Cincinnati was driving down the field to take the lead, and a turnover went the other way for six, and it changed that whole game. It really could be New England.
Well, Mike Salvatore says the 2020 Buccaneers only had one Pro Bowler and won three playoff games. Patriots getting on the road. Patriots getting a one seed is cute, but not even close to the same thing. Well, wait a minute. That Tampa Bay team had a quarterback in Jameis Winston, who is probably a slightly above average quarterback at best, throw 30 touchdown passes. He threw 30 interceptions. But they had a lot of good players on that team. Forget about who went to the Pro Bowl
Bowl. That's right. Ndamukong Suh, Jason Pierre-Paul, Antonio Brown. I mean, come on. Leonard Fournette.
But they add Fournette. They add Brown. They add Gronk.
Gronk's right? A Hall of Famer. Forget about a Pro Bowl.
So forget about going to the Pro Bowl.
And the greatest quarterback of all time.
That was a good team. And listen, and New England's a good team too, because I think last year was a mess because they didn't have a quarterback. They thought they'd get something from Cam, and they lost 4 starters to COVID. So the point being is that if he's – but still, look at that New England team, and you tell me that that's a team that should be the one seed in the AFC. Now, they haven't done it yet, but don't call it cute. When you've got an AFC that consists of Buffalo and Kansas City, there's some really good teams there, and they end up might be the best of all of them. Now, they Jimmy switched their way into a win last night because the wins was so amazingly high and affected the game, but they've been able to get a lot out of a rookie quarterback. Do not diminish the job that Bill is doing there in New England.
Do me a favor. Go read the starters on Tampa Bay, okay? Tell me how many names you don't know. Both sides of the ball. Both sides of the ball. Whether they were Pro Bowlers that year or not. Don, to your point, and for the record, that receiving core they've had has practically been the posse now for several years, okay? And then they added Gronk to it.
Hey, listen, 30 touchdown passes is not what it used to be when MVPs were throwing 40. But Winston threw 30 touchdown passes.
I could potentially argue that Mike Evans has been the most underrated
great. Mike Evans is outstanding.
He's the most underrated great receiver in the NFL the last 10 years. He's been consistently a stud. Godwin's a stud. Gronk, when it mattered, was phenomenal. I'm sorry. I think I'm more blown away right now by what the Patriots are doing. Now, we'll see what they're able to do in January, but I think the path could be harder for Tampa when you really look at the NFC. The NFC, to me, guys, is what's really wide open.
Robert Perrone says Cincinnati will surprise a lot of teams to the playoffs, so don't forget about them. Now, we can't forget about Cincinnati. They may end up winning that division, but I'm sorry. It seems like whenever you're ready to fall in love with Cincinnati, they kind of, you know, I still can't forget what the Jets did to them. I don't think they're going to be surprising.
You're also not allowed to say, as a football fan, you're not allowed to say, watch out, they're going to surprise some people in the playoffs when you're talking about the Cincinnati Bengals. It would be the same as, it's basically the same as me saying right now, when we're talking about Tampa, me going, hold on, watch out, Washington has something to say. I'm sorry, stop. Show me something first, then let's have a conversation.
Now, in the NFC, Tampa, they just came off doing it, so you'd have to say they're in the conversation, but I think Green Bay is certainly in the conversation. That could win. Arizona, we can't sleep on them. Just because they haven't done it before, but they continue to pass almost every test. It's going to be tough to see a Buccaneer-Patriots Super Bowl. It'd be great. It'd be unbelievable. Michael said, I think, you know, Roger Goodell would, his hair would catch fire. He would just, they'd unbelievable.
Besides the Cowboys being the Cowboys, so this answer will be tainted because at this point, any football fan, particularly NFC East fans, would be shocked to see the Cowboys do anything great in the playoffs. But remove that it's the Cowboys. In terms of what you've seen talent-wise, Don, would you be shocked to hear if any of these teams went to the Super Bowl? Arizona, Green Bay, Tampa, Dallas, or the Rams? None would
shock me. I'd be surprised if Dallas is in the Super Bowl.
But isn't that just because you're used to them collapsing this time of year every year?
No, I don't think they have a great coach.
Oh, well.
No, he did win a
Super Bowl.
He's been
there before. Yeah.
Right.
But
with
I'm
an all-time great quarterback.
I'm not in love with that team either.
But the Rams getting it together
The Rams, maybe with Odell finally getting things going, Von Miller.
They got a lot of pieces there.
I guess you couldn't be shocked, and it's not that far removed from actually going to the Super Bowl. So
the question
I don't think
mark
I'd be shocked
there is
by the Rams. Dallas a little bit, but you know they just need to see. I need to see a little bit more from them. This is usually the time of year where they struggle just a bit. But hey, I'd love to be able to go back to the archives, December 7th, 2020. How much were we talking about the Buccaneers winning a Super Bowl? I don't think we were talking about them winning a Super Bowl going into the playoffs because they were going to have to exclusively do it on the road. Heck, Washington almost beat them. The Saints almost beat them. All right, so they almost lost every one of their playoff games. So the team that went last year and won the whole thing, I'm not sure we were saying in December they were any kind of lock.
And what gets me about this conversation that we're having, it's so sobering to realize how far away we are from talking about the Jets and the Giants in any kind of a serious way. The Giants are one game behind the Jets. One win ahead, should I say. One win ahead of the Jets. The two of them have the worst records in football over the last decade. That's what we've seen here. And that includes an 11-5 Giant season where they made the playoffs. The Jets are not going to make the playoffs for 11 straight years.
Unbelievable. It really
and
it, just
and,
is.
Tell me what we're seeing that makes you think it's going to change anytime soon.
Well, I guess we'll see what happens with the Jets. Just because if Robert Saleh is the guy, then maybe they could do it soon. If Wilson turns out to be the quarterback they believe, with Saleh at head coach, I think we need more information to see what kind of coach he is. But I guess it's possible. With the Giants, it's more interesting because we've got some sample size here. This is year two for their head coach. This is year three for their quarterback. So I think you can make a much more educated guess that Daniel Jones and Joe Judge are not the answer. I don't think we have enough to say that Wilson and Saleh are not the answer.
No, we don't.
So the Jets, it could happen, and you hope it does. But with the Giants, I mean, do you believe that the Judge is the guy? Do you believe that Daniel Jones is the guy? I think from what we've seen, the answer would have to be no.
You know, Judge said something either yesterday or Sunday that really rubbed me the wrong way. He kept talking up the fact that Brian Flores was in his third year and you have time to really implement. See, he's trying to send a message to who? Maron Tisch? I'm only in my second year? Because that's kind of weak sauce. These are games that he should be winning. He should be going down to Miami and winning that game. There were a lot of winnable games in the second half of the season for the Giants. There were. Is he going to win any of them?
Well, here, you were not on, but I threw out, and it's just arbitrary. It was just me. Who am I? But with seven games left in the season, I said, if Joe Judge wants to come back here, if you want to believe he's the guy, go 4-3.
Why wasn't I on?
Because it's the Friday after Thanksgiving, and it doesn't happen. Mm. Peter and I alternate, it was my turn, and I killed it. We'll find out the numbers ultimately whether I did or not, but I felt good about it. Anthony felt good about it. So I said 4-3. So they're 1-1. So they've got to go 3-2 in their last five, I think. So what do they got? Philadelphia again, Chicago. They close out against Washington. That looks a lot tougher than it did maybe a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. They're in L.A. this week, and then I'm missing one, Dallas. So I kind of went 4-3, guys, thinking that they were going to beat Philadelphia and beat Miami. Well, they didn't beat Miami, so they're going to have and again, it doesn't matter. You can lose them all and come back, but – am I asking that much to go 3-2 in the last five? Finish with seven wins, one more than you did last year, and at least move forward? I don't think I'm asking for a lot there. And
but coming off what they did against Miami, you wonder if they can do it, Don. Yeah. You're not asking for a lot, but you wonder if they could do it. They played terribly. The last two games, the offense has been non-existent. Now, you could say it's Glennon, but you know what? It's not going to be Glennon, and it's not going to be Daniel Jones this week. It's going to be Jake Fromm, State Farm.
Yeah, so Fromm is probably going to go – well, he's definitely going to go, I would think, against the Chargers. So that was probably going to be a loss anyway, right? So if you end up getting Daniel Jones back for the last four, home against Dallas, at Philly, at Chicago, home against Washington, and just show me something. You fire the offensive coordinator, can you give me something? But it's always an excuse. But yet I find other teams find ways to put something together and to win. You keep losing games. You're so right. It just stinks. You look at all these teams that think they have a chance, teams that weren't good a couple of years ago, turning it around, competing for something. When is it going to happen for either of these two teams? It's been a while. At least a Giant fan feels like they've won a Super Bowl in recent memory. I do have it DVR'd, so it does feel like it happened at least in this century. But still,
you still
it's a
have
decade.
A DVR. You're holding up space on your DVR with a Giant Super Bowl.
Yeah, I just don't have the heart to delete it.
It's been deleted, baby. In real time, it's deleted the way they've played since.
No,
that's yeah for people's memories.
Well, that's all the more reason to keep it DVR'd, right, Peter?
Yeah. Listen,
Nirvana is a click away.
Yeah, you can live for a time when this organization knew what they were doing. It is frustrating when you see. I always feel the same way. Like, how are these teams, so many teams are able to compete? How did Arizona How did Arizona get back on the horse?
But look, I know we make fun of you talking about Washington, but forget about that you're a Washington football team fan. Look at Washington. They did not believe Heinicke could get them to the playoffs. They went and signed Ryan Fitzpatrick. He gets hurt immediately. And now with Heinicke, they actually have a better than serviceable offense that can go out there and win games. Defensively, they lose maybe one of the top five defenders in the league. Out. And yet now they're playing even better defensively. They've gotten off the mat from an awful start and now are firmly in the conversation to make the playoffs and maybe threaten to win the division. How is that possible? But it can't be possible for the Giants, who play in the same division, that have, I would think, a comparable quarterback, that have a comparable defense. But what's the difference? One has Ron Rivera, one has Joe Judge.
Let's take a brief timeout, take some phone calls, 1-800-919-3776. Knicks play tonight. The Rangers play tonight. We'll give you the schedule in just a moment. It's Kayla Greco, Rosenberg, and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
That's Game Time, brought to you by Tullamore Dew Irish Whiskey. We got a Knick game tonight.
Oh, yeah.
Knicks against the San Antonio Spurs. So you can hear it right here on 98.7 ESPN. And that'll be an 8:30 start, 8 o'clock pregame show, 8:30 play-by-play. We also have Brooklyn at Dallas, 7:30 start on TNT. See how they play and if Luka Doncic is actually playing. Also, Boston against the Lakers in L.A. And, Don, tell us about hockey today.
I'll tell you all you need to know about hockey. I know the Rangers. They're going to be in Chicago to take on the Blackhawks. And that game is going to be an 8:30 start on 10:50 a.m. And the Rangers looking for a seventh consecutive win overall. The Islanders will be in Ottawa to take on the Senators, looking to snap their 11-game winless streak. That game is at 7 o'clock.
There you go.
The Devils are idle.
Game Time, brought to you by Tullamore Dew Irish Whiskey. During the big games this season, enjoy Tullamore Dew, the original triple blended, triple distilled, and triple cask matured Irish whiskey. Remember, when it's game time, it's Tully time. Please enjoy responsibly. Peter, I want to ask you a question.
Please.
Yesterday, and I forgot. Okay. The Pinstripe Bowl is all set, and in the bowl is going to be your Maryland Terrapins. And, you know, you do have connections with the YES Network. You probably get really nice seats. Will you be going to the game?
I don't know. I can't pretend that I've watched any Maryland football this year. What's the date on that?
It's December 30th, is it?
No, I'm book solid.
Let's look it up. It's after Christmas. I know that.
Well, but that whole week I'm out. So
why?
It's the 29th? No, I'll be in Palm Springs.
Really?
Yeah. Taking a week in Palm Springs.
And at least he's not being
a
fraud.
It's December 29th, yes.
At least he's not being a fraud.
I'm not.
Because he hasn't watched a game all year. Now, all of a sudden, they happen to be in the Bronx. He's going to kill himself to go see it?
Yeah, I tuned in for a minute. By the way, Terps basketball, I believe, is at Barclays Center this weekend. Isn't that this Saturday?
Did they have a coach?
I don't know. I don't think so. Not as of last check, we don't.
Michael Casio on 98.7 ESPN, brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. Nope. It's the kind of service you get. Mm-hmm. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. And Jet fans, I need you to listen up. Get a little closer to the speakers. Here's your chance to win a pair of tickets to the Jet.
No, it's rumored.
Yeah. No. Here's your chance. What is?
Sorry.
Wow. What are you talking about?
Yeah, what are you saying?
I do well.
Who are you talking
Hello?
To?
Andrew said something in my ear, and I thought I was responding to him,
there.
Not to you. So, thank you.
You know, there's a microphone in front of your face.
It's not fair.
You speak to the whole world.
Don, you know that's not fair. That's not right.
There are times that things are said in my ear, and I don't know whether they were just said to me, whether it was said on the air, and he guessed wrong. That's all. But
Who am I speaking to, please?
In the same hour in which we had the...
Somebody tweeted this earlier, Don. This has a very Friday show feel to it, and I don't like it.
Yeah. The information is we did. I didn't realize they already hired Danny Manning. I thought that was rumored. I didn't know it actually went official.
Yeah, you really love your alma mater. Listen up,
Jets.
Here's your chance to win a pair of tickets to see the Jets take on the Saints this Sunday at MetLife Stadium. All you have to do is be the first caller right now at 888-987-ESPN. brought to you by the New York Jets. Get tickets to see the Jets host the Saints at MetLife Stadium on Sunday, December 12th. That's at 1 p.m. presented by Verizon. Lock in your seats at nyjets.com/tickets. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Ira in Staten Island. Ira.
Hey, Michael, Don, Peter, how are you?
Great,
and,
you?
You know, interesting, all good. Interesting conversation you were just having about both teams. But, you know, after watching the Pats and the Bills last night, and of course I'm concerned more about the Jets, and if Watson goes to Miami, you know, who knows what's going to happen with that. But watching these two teams play last night, it just makes you realize, and I'm being realistic here. It's not like I'm dumping on them. They are so far behind the eight ball. Even if Douglas hits it big time in the draft next year and they open up the checkbook and they bring in some free agents, you still got the development of the quarterback. You still got the development of the coaching staff. And I think there's going to be massive changes on the defensive staff if they continue to perform these next 5 weeks like they've performed most of the season. But even with that said, Mac Jones and the Patriots are only going to continue to get better. The Bills will address their running game. Josh Allen is the real deal. The Dolphins seem to be on track. I mean, am I unrealistic to say that Jets are 2 or 3 years away from really competing with these teams?
No, I don't think you are. No. I think you're being realistic. I think you're being rational.
Well, free agency kind of changes it around a little bit. If Wilson turns out to be a stud, Ira, then there's no reason to believe that he can't really start showing you things next year. And it looks like he's got some weapons. They've got draft picks to add to those weapons. So maybe next year, the year after, maybe it's possible.
But that division's going to be a dogfight. I mean, the Bills aren't going anywhere. The Patriots, I think, are only getting better as Mac Jones grows. So,
well, I guess the question is, how long is
Jets and the Dolphins? I think.
How long is Bill going to do this? He's 69 already.
I read today he wants to coach till he's 75. At least 75.
But if he wins another one, I don't know. Listen, why not? He's what his age anyway? I mean, he's so successful. If he wants to coach to 75, it's not like, you know, Tom Brady, where he's got to keep himself in physical condition. He's, as long as Bill stays healthy, you know, mentally wise, he can coach until he's 80, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Let's go to Raffaello in Brooklyn. Raffaello.
Hey, guys. Long-time caller. As a matter of fact, real quick, I actually tweeted you, Michael K., a while back under the handle Pheromone. This is before I had a son, and I was I'm a big Yankees fan, and I was like, if my son was pitching against the Yankees versus the Red Sox, I would chop his arm off. And he actually retweeted that. So I did
that's
not
a little
have,
problematic.
Not have
a
son, so I don't have to do that anymore. But I'm a big Jets fan, and I just wanted the Jets Nation to kind of relax a little bit. It's our first-year head coach, first-year quarterback. I think we just look at a draft and see we get some great players out of that situation and see how that develops. So I want to know your thoughts on that.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying that you make wholesale changes after 1 year, but I kind of would like Raffaello to see some improvement. And now we saw some improvement this past Sunday with Zach Wilson. He looked better. You know, I want him to play the rest of the games and continue to get better, but the defense is a concern. That's kind of like the area of expertise for the coach. Maybe they'll blame the defensive coordinator because he's not calling the defensive plays, Robert Saleh. He's not doing that. He's letting Ulbrich do that. But I know there are injuries. You know, Lawson was a big loss. I get it. But you got to play better than this, right?
And then we'll have to wait and see on the general manager, right? A lot of fans are done with him too. And whether Joe Douglas has done right by this fan base with the draft picks. But it's going to be predicated on what Wilson does. And he's going to have 2 first-round picks, possibly very high picks, that can make an impact coming up in 2022. So third-year general manager. First-year coach, first-year quarterback, it's too early to decipher what's going on here. I don't think it is for the Giants.
Don, let's take this in an analytical way. Earlier in the show, Peter got on the air and repeated something that you had said just 5 minutes earlier, almost verbatim.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was trouble.
All right, and then this happened a couple of minutes ago, It's like, you know, people talking to clouds, right? Here's Peter on the air being a little off. Here's your chance to win a pair of tickets to the Jets.
No, it's rumored.
Yeah. No. Here's your what is?
Sorry.
Wow. What are you talking about?
Yeah, what are you saying?
I do well.
Who are you talking
Hello?
To? This is that's two awful things that happened, Don.
That one may be worse. Can we hear that one more time?
Yeah,
sure. The beginning's really
upsetting. Here's your chance to win a pair of tickets to the Jets.
No, it's rumored.
Yeah. No. Here's your chance. What is?
Sorry.
Wow. What are you talking about?
Yeah, what are you saying?
I do well.
Who are you talking
Hello?
To?
This now, that's what's very interesting. Just the full disclosure.
Okay.
I'm in the station because I got the Rangers to do. Michael's home. Peter's home. When you're home, you don't have a talk back. And what a talk back is the ability to talk back to the station or talk to your producer without it going over the air. All right? That's a given. You know that.
Yep.
Now, I can understand Peter getting confused. Did Andrew say that on the air about the Maryland coach or off the air? But for him to respond on the air.
Well, I'm reading, an ad.
I don't know why. I just assumed when he said it, he pulled me down and was like talking to me. I didn't know it was just a.
Why would you think? You were betting on the 10% chance of something happening rather than just safely going with the 90% chance of what did happen.
It might be time for you to just step away from
No, don't go there.
No. Just, I mean, for a couple of weeks. Back it up. I mean, this is not normal what he's
doing
today.
You know what?
Also. Again, lifting the skirt of the show, tomorrow is Friday at Jace as far as ratings are concerned.
See ya! Yeah.
So we do see the light at the end of the tunnel, so maybe Peter's
but here's what I'm afraid of, Don. Here's what I'm afraid of, okay?
Right.
So tomorrow's the important day of the book.
Sure. Yeah.
And then Thursday is what we call the holiday book.
Right, not more.
Which people dance on the grave of, okay? But you're taking the day off to see a recital.
Oh, no.
You're leaving me with this lunatic alone. Peter, why don't you take off Thursday and let me do the show alone?
Listen, I know that's your favorite thing. You don't tell me twice.
That's Don's favorite thing. But I can't be saddled with you if you're going to be talking to clouds.
I will. Listen, today's Larry Bird's birthday. There's a lot on my mind.
How old is Lar?
Lar was born December 7th, 1956.
So that makes him 65.
Wow.
Wow.
There's no world I want to be where a guy that I watched play is now a senior citizen.
65.
Do you think he signed up for AARP? They keep bugging me, and I won't do it. I keep throwing their envelopes away.
Well, you're fighting a good fight, but you're still – they start sending those things when you're 50. So
yeah, and
that's
it annoyed
obnoxious.
Me at that point. It annoyed me.
Is Bird being 65 weird for you guys? Because you guys both remember the start of his career. I know the end.
I remember the Magic Johnson
against Magic.
Sports Illustrated when, you know, the Michigan State, Indiana State. Like, that's very fresh in my memory. So for his entire career, and now basically he's a senior citizen in my lifetime is terrifying. And the other thing, too, this blew me away, Michael. Peter's not going to get it. I was watching the game, but I was on Twitter checking something out, and I stumble upon this. Roy Orbison was 52 when he died.
Yeah, he was very young.
But when I remember when he died, I was thinking, he was an older guy. He was 50. I'm a year older than Roy Orbison was when he died. When they did the traveling Wilburys, it felt like they wheeled him out to do it.
Well, hold on.
You also realize that. Yeah, Sidney Poitier was 92 when you killed him.
Well, that was...
And he's still great. He's still alive.
Dear God.
Now, in all fairness, though, let's just be honest. Roy Orbison's brand was weird. I mean, his whole brand was to look old always.
I know, but it's still like it was 88. It was a long time ago. But I remember in 1988 when I was 20 thinking, wow, Roy Orbison died. Yeah, it makes sense. He's older.
But Don, do you realize that Wilford Brimley was younger than you are right now when he was in Cocoon?
Yeah, that... you joke?
It's true.
Yeah, I let's get the confirmation on that. I don't think he was 53, but he was close.
One thing he didn't have, Peter, though, he did not have two-tone hair.
No, that's very different.
I
By
don't
the way,
know why. Is this look that bad, honestly?
It's distressing with the two different colors.
By the way, Don, just to add a little bit more insight to your Orbison concerns.
Right.
Which is, by the way, the name of Don's seventh book.
Orbison's Concerns?
It's like Portnoy's Complaint.
Mm-hmm.
On his Wikipedia page, it says career decline and tragedies. That part of his life, and unfortunately there's multiple tragedies, was 65 to 69. So, like, he was already on the back end of it then.
Yeah, I'm just
and
saying.
And then he makes a comeback, and then he died. I could see why you thought he was older.
Also, Wilford Brimley, that you just showed on Yes, when he was in The Natural, and he looked like he was Methuselah, he was
29.
26. He was 49 years old.
Yeah, that's and he was 51 in Cocoon.
So you are older than he was in Cocoon.
But, you know, Wilford,
get in the pool, buddy. Get in the pool.
But maybe much like Roy Orbison, Wilford, he kind of committed to that look. He didn't make any effort.
Now you're talking about diabetes.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, guys, let's
diabetes.
Paul Simon is 80.
Right.
All right, let's take a brief time out as we ponder death. 1-800-919.
I don't think we were doing that.
Yes, we were. 3776.
We're close.
Kay, LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.